Hello, this is Michael Zuber, and I wanted to thank you for choosing to spend a little time with One Rental at a Time. My life's mission is to help investors close 1 million rental properties. In order to tackle this crazy goal, I will need your help. If you like this episode or any of the content we produce, please share it on social media. If you get one of my books or perhaps one of our 500 cards, please take a selfie and tag One Rental at a Time. Now on with the show.
So what if Peter Zion is right and we have rates staying higher for the next 5 to 10 years? And by higher, let me be clear, let's assume they stay right where they are. There is no give back in rates. And we're going to have this conversation with Jonathan Twombly because he plays in the commercial space. We have both highlighted the amount of pain coming because of debt resets and cap rate expansion. But now we're going to take on the big thorny subject of what happens if rates don't move for 5 years. The extend and pretend, you can't go that long, I don't think. But let's talk to Jonathan and see what's what. Jonathan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Michael. Good to be back.
Absolutely. Love these conversations. Yeah. You know, we were early. We highlighted the pain coming, right? We famously took a $100 million building and turned it into $48 million, which is a couple of small tweaks. That is actually happening seemingly every day. Now I hear about another building going down 50%. But also we highlighted debt. I think we talked about $1 trillion resetting. And then we talked about some of that being kicked down the line, right? Kicking the can another year. But Jonathan, I got to ask, what happens if there's no give back in rates and we stay right where we are for 5 years, shoot, until 2030? You can't extend and pretend that long, can you?
No. Maybe.
Oh.
Maybe you can, but a lot of things have to go right. Okay. So what has to go right? The economy has to continue to be strong and you have to continue to have demand and rent growth. And there is as the rate cut scenario has become less and less likely, and people have become more and more realistic about it, we're also recognizing that even if there are rate cuts, they're not going to be very large, mm-hmm. absent a big, really serious recession. A lot of people have been starting to focus on the fact that in the markets that have been very, very oversupplied, construction starts are falling. Right, and they're falling because interest rates are high and it's harder to make the deals pencil. Mm-hmm. So what a lot of people are hoping for, a lot of people have now fixated on that statistic. And the idea is that, well, hey, if we can extend and pretend until rent growth starts to kick in again, then we can grow our way out of this problem, right? Mm-hmm. And okay. this is not a ridiculous idea. This is a plausible scenario.
But again,
it depends on, you know, demand staying strong, nothing really going wrong with the economy, at least in those markets that are oversupplied, people being right about the projections for a new building. There's a lot of factors upon which this depends. And then it's going to, you know, be the amount of the rent growth. And then it's also going to be, you know, sort of the attitude of bankers, right? Now, the bankers could, even let's say this scenario plays out as people hope it does, interest rates, even if they don't come down, but you can start getting NOI growth again, right? You start the property on the up, you know, starts being able to pay for the debt that it has. You can imagine sort of one of two scenarios happening. One is the bank saying, aha, now's our chance to foreclose and sell and get our capital back,
right?
Or, you know, we'll just ride this out until we can exit and replace this debt. I don't know, honestly, I don't think that's going to be probably a case by case basis. Lender by lender, operator by operator. And it'll probably, you know, depend on how much faith the lender has in the operator, you know, the pressure that's on the lender. Does the lender need to return that money to somebody else who's pressuring them? I mean, there's so many different variables that go into this.
Right.
That you can't, it's hard to make a general prediction about what will happen. But you could see a scenario in which even if interest rates stay more or less where they are, we could grow ourselves out
of let's play with that a little bit. Let's just take that rosy scenario, but possible. I think that also means that inflation has to stay high. Because if you're going to grow out of this to get NOI growth,
yeah,
that means that shelter inflation's not going to, you know, no disinflation there.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so that's,
I mean, you need, yeah, I mean, there's just, it's complicated, right? It's a really tough knot to untie because there's so many different kind of strands going into it like that. But
let me share with you what and commercial is certainly not residential. I'm not trying to say it is, but in the last cycle, it was very residential focused. And what I saw up close and personal is lenders, you know, made some overtures to extend and pretend light. But then at some point, they're just like, we got to take our medicine. And unfortunately, they all chose to do that at seemingly the same time. And then to your point about lending appetite, they just stopped lending.
Yeah.
And it was actually some of the safest loans they could have made. So I just can't see a lender extending, like if you had a 2-year bridge debt, maybe I could see you doing an extra year. I just can't see 5 years. I think if we truly keep rates where they are, you're going to see just a slow trickle of pain being recognized. And you know, maybe not the class A, the tippy top, you know, top 10 operators, maybe they get a pass, but there's a lot of people below the top, you know, 1% of operators. So it's just 5 years feels like everything breaks.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be, like I said, that everything has to kind of work out as hoped. And I think it's also going to depend on, you know, the region too, because, you know, let's look at places like the Midwest where it wasn't overbuilt. Right. And now you're seeing, you've seen decent rent growth. It's never the spectacular rent growth you had in the South, but you also aren't having the swing in the other direction now. Right. Or, you know, some of the coastals like the Northeast, California, right? You're not getting, you didn't have the same, because it's so freaking hard to build in those places, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't have the oversupply problem. So they didn't have the rent debacle, right? That you've seen in places where it's super easy to build. So operators in those markets will probably have a decent shot at growing themselves out of this problem. And lenders looking at them and saying, hey, look, it's worth rolling. This is trending in the right direction. Like we see the path out now and it's worth extending a couple more years to through that growth to get, you know, for us to have enough runway to get out and be made whole. But I think in some other places where they're looking at, you know, still a real issue with, you know, supply outstripping demand, some of these people just may run out of runway. I mean, the lenders themselves may run out of runway, right?
So like we've heard from the Fed there, or maybe it's the FDIC, I forget which one. I think it was the Federal Reserve is tracking 293 banks that have risk, you know, on their balance sheets, and most of that being commercial real estate loans. The other thing I want to talk about is the lenders themselves, because a lot of these loans, I would guess what would you think the average LTV is? 65%, 60%? What do you think the average is?
God, I did actually see a statistic on this not that long ago. Overall, the whole market, you know,
yeah, I'm just trying to get a swag of a number so I can continue my thought process.
Yeah, including properties that have been like where people didn't refi out and, you know, just paid down their debt. Yeah, I mean, probably the entire market as a whole, it's probably 60% or less.
So let's just call it 60% for this example, because this is so not the residential story. Because again, if you're a lender and you need your money back, there's a good chance that you could execute a foreclosure and be whole. The equity will be gone, but the lender will be fine.
Yeah, I mean, in some scenarios, right? But those are probably not the properties that are in trouble, right? Where the lender is, where you're at 60% LTV or whatever, right? Those, because just think about it, like your debt service on a loan like that at a fixed rate of interest that was below where we are now, those properties are probably performing fine. And the thing is, a lot, even though there's been a lot of high profile cases where like syndicators basically got everything wrong, right? Where they took on bad debt and they didn't execute their value add, and their DSCR is, you know, at 50% at point, you know, 0.5, which is insane. Those are the whole the high profile cases. There are a lot of properties out there where the problem is just the debt. Like on the operations side, they're just fine, and they're full. People are paying. They're collecting rents. It's just that they can't make their debt service, right? So, but so as a general proposition, like the apartment sector is in fairly good shape, other than a few markets that are currently oversupplied. And we just talked about how that will should begin to work itself out, like around 2026. So for anybody who bought earlier in the cycle, anybody who bought at lower leverage, those people are all fine. Like, and they're there's that is, you know, that is not the issue. The issue is really the people who bought at the top with too much leverage. And a lot of that was also, I know you want to talk about banks, but a lot of that, a lot of the stupid loans, right? The high LTV, low DSCR, variable rate loans were actually from non-bank lenders, right? There are a lot of private lenders, debt funds, you know, private equity, all these kinds of people that were, you know, rushed in to fill the space that the banks wouldn't fill, because at a certain point, sort of 21, 22, the banks and the federal agencies couldn't underwrite these loans, right? They just didn't,
They didn't pencil.
it didn't pencil it without low leverage. And if you went with low leverage, you couldn't compete, right? So everybody started turning these other non-bank lenders. And you got to think about like how kind of dumb they were, right? Like they rushed in to fill this space.
Rushing in at the peak is not a good idea.
Right, because they all made this calculation, which was first like, hey, this is going to go on forever, right? And they all bought the Kool-Aid about interest rates. And the second thing was like, okay, well, we're higher up in the capital stack, so we're protected. So what could go wrong? Like a worst case scenario is we're going to foreclose. But they never, none of them were envisioning the scenario where they and all their competitors were all having to foreclose at the same time, just like in the great financial crisis, right? So that's where they are now. Like they can't foreclose without creating a bigger problem for themselves. They kind of have to extend and pretend, right?
Well,
So I
let's
think.
play with that. So I don't know anything about debt funds and private equity in this space, but I'm just going to guess. They have time, they have clocks on that money, right? They probably had a fund that was like a 5-year fund or whatever. So they got a big pile of capital from some rich people in private offices, family offices. But they owe that money back to somebody at some time, right? Usually.
I mean, some of that money is borrowed too, right? I mean, a
Oh,
lot of people
shoot,
were,
borrowed.
right?
Whoops.
They were borrowing that money. I think some of them, you know, were able to get pretty close to the Fed window, and you know, they were borrowing at real low interest rates, right?
Okay.
Maybe
So
not the
borrow it 4, lend it 10 or whatever, and make the
exactly.
spread.
They were borrowing cheap, and lending it. You know, well, I mean, they were lending at pretty cheap rates too. That was the whole attraction. But they were building in their spread. But at some point, they have to, you know, they have to
And
turn down the
that's
amount.
the clock that I'm trying to play with, right? If we keep rates high to 2030, I don't know the clock on these funds, but I'm going to guess they're somewhere between 5 and 10 years.
Well,
And go ahead.
yeah, and if they were, you know, what a lot of them might have been doing is something like selling the 5-year treasury, right? And then loaning out the proceeds, and then so they've got to cover the 5-year treasury that they sold, right? And so it's you know, like that's they you're right, they're time limited, right? They do have to turn around and give the money back at some point. So now if they're, you know, they may be having the same conversations with whoever funded them, saying, hey, look, do you really want to take a haircut or not? We think that there's, you know, here's the runway that we see. So the conversations are kind of happening on both sides, right? A lot of these people, they're probably better off if they use equity to lend out, right? But if they use debt themselves, then they're
Yeah,
also
there's multiple clocks. So this gets messy. I think the pain comes on the sell side. But there's always a buy side as well, right? So if we keep rates at this high level or this level for another 5 years, we've basically reset cap rates across the board, right? I mean, it's significantly higher. Yeah.
I mean, listen, there's still a lot of people out there arguing that, oh, there's so much money out there on the sidelines that's looking to be deployed and it will keep, you know, cap rates from rising too much. I've never really bought this argument because it's, at the end of the day, it's still a lot of the money that's been on the sidelines has been on the sidelines just waiting for real discounts. It's not waiting for a 10% discount. I mean, they're waiting for blood in the streets.
Yeah. Right?
That's what a lot of that money is waiting for. So they're looking, they're waiting for the 50 cents on the dollar opportunity, not the 80 cents on the dollar one. Right.
And so agreed.
That's part of it. But I think also, there will have to be a reset because the math just won't work. And the lenders are not going to lend. This is the thing. There's only, like, when you have all this sort of quote unquote dry powder, right? Okay, if the lenders aren't lending, then you've got to use more of your dry powder to buy, right? More of the cash to buy. And then you're depressing your returns. And then it really becomes a question of people asking themselves, well, should we just leave this in, you know, treasuries at 5%?
Exactly.
Or should we go and buy a riskier asset? Even if it's a class A real estate asset, it's still riskier than a treasury, right? So they have to be asking themselves those questions. And for the money that's trying to go and hit a home run somewhere, well, if real estate isn't doing it, it's just going to go look somewhere else, right? Whatever the next hot thing is. So it's not like this dry powder is there and the only place it can go is multifamily real estate, right? It'll go into something else to find the return that it's looking for. So I agree. Like if you see interest rates stay at this level for a sustained period, you know, to the point where people just give up on the whole, you know, lower interest rates idea, or even let's play it out, let's say interest rates go down by 50 basis points, same thing, right? The market will eventually capitulate to the idea that interest rates are staying. This is where interest rates are. Cap rates will reset accordingly, and we'll have start a new cycle, right? So
I think it's an interesting theory to play with it, that rates stay where they are for, you know, who would have guessed higher for longer is 5 years, 6 years. But yeah. I think the commercial real estate market kind of just cleanses and resets. I really think that's the outcome. If this happens, you know, all those 2-year bridge debt, all that stuff gets cleaned up. The people who bought at the peak suffer their pain. But more importantly, the values get reset, cap rates, expectations get reset. And then there's, you know, then you just start anew at some point.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, listen, and here's the thing too, that I think has gotten forgotten in a lot of the discussion over the last few years, right? A cap rate is equal to a risk. Like it's a measurement of risk, right?
Correct.
And so cap rate, if the market perceives the asset class as being riskier, then cap rates will rise because they'll require a higher risk premium. And especially if you have an alternative like a T-bill at 5%, then you're going to, there's going to be a risk spread over that T-bill, right? And it's going to be like for Class A, it'll be at least a point higher than the T-bill, right? And for you can get up to Class C, which is going to be 2 to 3 points, probably 3 points higher than the T-bill, right? So, which is kind of where it has been for a long time. And, you know, that's just the way the markets work. Like people, the reason that cap rates got so low is because people perceived there wasn't risk in multifamily.
Correct. Right?
That was why they got so low. It wasn't just because interest rates were low and people were looking for yield. People also thought this is not a risky asset. This is a safe asset. And so therefore,
that's exactly what happened. Everybody rushed in. Dumb money followed dumb money. And you know, we're going to get what we get. So I think it's interesting to think about. I don't think rates stay higher for longer, but it's certainly an interesting brain teaser to think about.
Well, I mean, I know you've spelled out your reason why you think rates are going to come down, which I think is, you know, makes a lot of sense. But I also just wonder, like, So everyone always says, like, don't say this time is different, right? Mm. Except that, well, the last 10 years was different, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like yeah. We had this unprecedented low interest rates for an unprecedented amount of time, right? And there, I think that there is something, and this isn't scientific, but I mean, there's reversion to the mean, right? And for cap interest rates and cap rates to revert, like, for the mean to go back to what it was, then you need to have, if you had an extended period of low rates, you have to have an extended period of high rates to return the mean to what it was, right? So I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but I kind of feel like, just on a gut level, that we may be in for that, right?
Sure.
Which is too low for too long a time. And it's, you know, it's sort of like the inverse of the 1970s, right? Where it was too high for too long, and then they, you know, where like the stock market was flat for 10 years and then you had a boom that followed, right? And it's sort of like, I kind of feel like we had the boom, and then, you know, the 60s had a boom in the stock market, and then the 70s was a lost decade, right? And I kind of feel like commercial real estate had such a big boom in the last 13 years that I think we may be in for a really boring real estate market for a while, and it's all going to go back to cash flow and NOI growth. Like
I totally agree
because of interest rates and stuff like that.
Well, that's certainly what I believe in residential. I keep telling folks, I think we got the full decade of appreciation in 3 years, and we're going to be, you know, we're going to be flat. Certainly on a real basis, we'll be flat, maybe not nominal based on where inflation goes, but it wouldn't shock me if real estate's just kind of boring and we clean up some mistakes, but we also get good operators and we just focus on NOI growth. That's what it should have always been. Jonathan, you do a lot of work on LinkedIn. Where can people find you?
Yeah, just come follow me on LinkedIn. Reach out to me. I'm happy to connect with you. Tell me you're from the channel. It's always good to see when people are listening and getting something out of the show. So that's the place to find me.
Awesome. Thank you so much.